Hello and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about Chinese and or Lunar New Year food traditions.
We are. And we're also featuring our very first guest.
Guest?
People will actually talk to us.
Oh, I never had any idea that this day would come. And two guests, actually, not even just one.
Yeah. So this is a big episode for us.
It really is. Joe McCormick and Robert Lamb of Stuff to Blow Your Mind are going to join us later on in the episode to share some of their experiences and research.
Yes, because they have episodes coming out very differently themed.
Yes.
About Lunar New Year, and we might probably are going to appear on their show. So, yeah, we're working together.
We're having fun.
Uh-huh. I love Lunar New Year and or Chinese New Year.
And or Spring Festival.
It has many names because almost all of the lucky foods have like wordplay involved, making them sort of edible puns, which is the best.
Yeah, it's a highly pun-related holiday.
So much so. And I mean, there's even added layers of color and shape. There's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
And I did have the good fortune to spend Chinese New Year in China a couple of years ago. And at the time, I celebrate it in the U.S. I kind of just use it as an excuse to go get dim sum.
Oh, well, that's any excuse to get dim sum is a good one.
Oh, it's excellent. Yeah. And I see like the dances. We have a bit of a Chinatown in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But that was my only experience with it. And when I was in China, I realized what a big deal it is. And I had a great time, even though I was shocked that everything was closed all of a sudden. I didn't know it was coming. I enjoy celebrating it.
I've never celebrated myself, but it sounds completely amazing. And I've had a lot of the foods associated with it, and they're all top notch.
Yeah. Yes, I have a celebration planned for us. So.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So let's dive in here. Lunar New Year, as we said, often called Chinese New Year or Spring Festival, it's coming up. I believe it's February 16th. And this year is the year of the dog.
Specifically, it is an earth dog year.
Oh, I am an earth dragon, by the way.
I'm a water dog.
I love she put her hand on her hip when she said it. It was very official. It goes by a bunch of other names, too.
Aside from just Chinese New Year, yes.
Yes. Vietnamese Tet, Tibetan Losar, and Korean Solnal. Oh, and that this year thing, since it's based on a lunisolar calendar, where it falls varies each year.
Yeah.
The first new moon of the Chinese lunar calendar marks the beginning of the Lunar New Year, and it lasts for 15 days until the first full moon of the lunar calendar. The beginning typically falls between January 21st and February 20th on Western calendars, which is why if you're born in those months, you have to kind of go look up when you were born to find out what animal you are in the zodiac.
Ah.
Because it might vary.
Because it might vary, sure.
Mm-hmm. And this is a celebration that is chock full of traditions.
Mm-hmm.
The Lunar New Year has been around quite a while. Astronomical records inscribed on oracle bones, that's so cool, put it at least 14th century BCE and Shang Dynasty around that time.
So modern concepts of spring festival celebration are combinations of these thousands of years of rituals and are influenced by Taoism and Confucianism and Buddhism. And of course, every family celebrates a little bit differently.
Of course. We're going to be giving you kind of a generally what goes on, but it's very specific per family.
Of course.
And in different countries. This is a food show, so we're going to focus mainly on those types of traditions.
Weird.
Yeah. But briefly, here are some non-food traditions in history. 10 days before Lunar New Year Day, New Year's Day, I should say, something called a sweeping of the grounds takes place. And this is sort of a deep clean of the house to get rid of any bad luck that might be hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
Something I read from Columbia University and some other places, but primarily there, said that in a lot of Chinese homes, there's a portrait of a kitchen god, or perhaps calligraphy for the kitchen god's name, who takes note throughout the year of your cleanliness, your wastefulness, and kindness throughout the year. What do you say to strangers when they come in? At year's end, he will report his findings to the Jade Emperor.
The Jade Emperor being a deity who rules over the heavenly domain and heads the heavenly court, similar a little bit to a human emperor on Earth. And so your hearth or stove or kitchen god is sort of the heaven's micro-local bureaucratic outpost.
Exactly. And as the lunar year is drawing to a close and you're doing your cleaning, you would bribe the kitchen god with pastries or candies or wine. You might even rub his lips, if it's a portrait and not calligraphy, with honey so he'd tell the Jade Emperor sweet things about you. When the ritual was complete, the portrait is burned and off he went to report to the Jade Emperor. And then his portrait was replaced with a new one.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. New Year's Eve and New Year's Day are usually set aside for family and honoring ancestors. They're called reunion dinners. In southern China, you might leave sugarcane stalks behind the door to represent the hope that you'll be climbing up that ladder, or going up in life, to use some Western turns of phrase. Throughout the 15 days, there will be lion dances and fireworks culminating in the Lantern Festival. And a legend surrounding Lunar New Year's involves a vicious human flesh-eating creature called Nian, which is the word for year, that is afraid of loud noises and fire. You know, your firecrackers.
Oh.
The color red, which is why you see red a lot during this time. Red lanterns.
Red decorations.
Yeah. Around the
red
door.
Red envelopes, all the things.
Mm-hmm. And the story behind the Chinese zodiac goes like this.
Ah.
In ancient times, the Jade Emperor decided that the calendar should include animals. He decreed that the first 12 animals that arrived to his palace would be integrated into the calendar.
Ah.
Two pals. The cat and the rat were the first to hear this news, and they decided to start out early to arrive first. The cat, however, was notorious for sleeping late, and he asked the rat to wake him up, which the rat promised to do.
Oh,
yeah, you see where this is going. The rat forgot. And in his, let's say, enthusiasm to wake the cat, and on his journey to the palace, he ran into a tiger, a horse, an ox, all of these much bigger and faster animals. The rat was not going to be left behind, though. He convinced the ox to let him hitch a ride on his back on the condition that the rat would sing the whole day, which, unless the rat was a fantastic singer, this sounds like a horrible deal to me.
I can't imagine any friends that I would be like, oh, yeah, you can ride for free in my car if you sing the entire time.
Yeah, just the whole time. No.
Actually, there's like one. I have some very talented friends. But
you do. You do. I just feel like it'll wear, though. But anyway, that's what the ox wanted. And the pair arrived before the other animals. But the rat jumped off and beat the ox to being the first one there. And by the time the cat groggily awoke, rubbed his eyes, and got to the palace, all 12 spots had been snatched up. And to this day, this is why the cat hunts and kills rats.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great, that's a terrific fable.
Yeah.
I like this.
You can also use the zodiac symbols to tell time, apparently. I'm not going to go into it, but that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's a public holiday, as I mentioned before. Workers in China, Hong Kong, and some other countries that have a large Chinese population or any large population that celebrates, they get 7 days off in a row, which means a lot of traveling. In 2016, Fortune magazine dubbed it the greatest travel nightmare of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The seventh day of Lunar New Year is known as Common Person's Birthday and is the day that everyone grows a year older. So you have your birthday, the actual date, but it's the common person's birthday where you kind of acknowledge.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Gregorian calendar was officially adopted in China in 1912, but both January 1st and Lunar New Year were celebrated as New Year. That is, until Mao Zedong and the Chinese Communist Party came into power in 1949. They banned celebrations of the Lunar New Year. The government grew more and more lax, though, and as the 20th century came to a close, it was more acceptable to participate in Lunar New Year's festivities once again. And once 1996 rolled around, the government put in place that week-long holiday. So, it's a big celebration over there now.
Yeah, not small.
No, and let's talk about some of those things you might celebrate with food-wise.
Yes. Well, those delicious foods, yeah. But first, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. So, food traditions for the Lunar New Year actually start a couple weeks beforehand with the Laba Festival, a harvest celebration with its own traditional porridge or congee called Laba Porridge, or sometimes Eight Treasure Porridge. Eight is a very lucky number. Yes. It's made of different kinds of rice plus peanuts, dates, seeds, and so on. Families may make batches to share with relatives and friends, and some Buddhist monasteries make giant batches to share with the whole community. And it's kind of the official countdown to the new year.
Yeah.
It's when people start getting excited.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about that New Year's Eve feast.
Yeah, that reunion dinner.
So it's celebrated with family, as we said, and it's one of the biggest meals of the year.
It's like Thanksgiving.
Yeah. For those that celebrate Lunar New Year, a lot of dishes served have to do with homonyms, which is excellent. In Cantonese, the word for good business is a homonym for oysters. So that's a frequent New Year's Eve item. The Cantonese word for shrimp sounds like laughter, so it shows up a bit too. You might find clams on dinner tables because when they're cooked, they open up like the opening of new prospects, or so you have hopes for in your new year. Jiaozi, our meat field dumplings enjoyed at midnight, is common in northern China. This also has to do with sounding similar to a word that means meeting of the old and new year. The shape plays a role, too. It looks like a currency used in Imperial China. And yet on another level, since the process of making dumplings is time-consuming and involves a lot of people working together, it's seen as a way to bring peace to the family. In some families, a gold coin might be placed inside, granting whoever finds it even more luck.
And hopefully not a broken tooth.
Hopefully not. To showcase abundance for the last course of the New Year's feast, it's traditional to have fish, the word for which is a homonym for abundance or surplus. So you have the fish, but then you don't eat it.
Oh.
Yeah. Or depending on where you are.
You might.
But you have to leave some left over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The head of the fish is positioned facing the elders or guest as a sign of respect. For luck, the two people across from the head and tail are supposed to drink at the same time, which I imagine causes some hilarity. If the fish is going to be eaten, the other guests have to wait until the person who the fish's head is facing has had the first bite. And this sounds very serious, but from what I read, it's all pretty lighthearted. During the New Year's holidays, a traditional greeting translates to, "May we eat fish every year."
If you're not eating the fish, a main protein might be a simple dish of chopped chicken that's been scalded and lightly boiled until it's white and then seasoned with sesame oil and served warm with a couple dipping sauces. Families spend the whole night together and stay up until midnight, light fireworks, and ring in the official new year. Then.
Yes.
You wake up the first morning of the new year. You're with your family. You maybe have a couple singed fingers. You get dressed up in your best clothes and you start the celebration of this whole multi-week thing with a tea ceremony wherein the younger generations offer cups of tea sweetened with candied fruits along with words of good wishes to the older generations. The older generations respond with a red envelope, traditionally filled with messages of good fortune, but these days usually containing a literal bit of good fortune in the form of paper money.
With, I believe, specific denominations.
There's numbers can be very lucky or unlucky, and depending on how close you are and what the different...
Right.
Yeah, it's a really intricate system.
It is.
And I don't understand it, but it's great.
It is, yeah.
And then the feasting just continues for days.
Yep.
Anything fried is considered a symbol of wealth. It's sort of fancy, after all, to have access to so much fat. Also, that golden color. Spring rolls in particular are popular. You know, the filling that's rolled in a thin dough and then fried because of their resemblance to bars of gold.
Oh. Long noodles for long life are eaten throughout the first 5 days. They can be up to 2 feet or a little over half a meter long.
And these are made by rolling up large sheets of dough and then slicing them crosswise into noodles. Whereas normal noodles might be cut into manageable threads, these are left uncut.
I have enough trouble eating noodles anyway. I would get into such... There's even a picture somewhere someone took of me eating noodles because I... If you have long hair, it gets complicated.
Oh, it's very tricky. You always have to have a hairband with you if you're going to...
I've started just having one on my wrist.
Yeah.
Because in case of noodles.
Noodles can happen anytime.
Anytime. And I want to be prepared. Pork, as with a lot of Western New Year's traditions, is seen as good luck food, symbolizing abundance and wealth. Turnip cakes are another popular option, especially in Taiwan, where it is associated with a phrase for good luck.
It's traditional to do a lot of visiting with family and friends around the new year, so it's always good to have easy snacks on hand. And this is formalized in a tray of togetherness, which is this platter of bite-sized sweets and snacks. A tray has 8 compartments you can fill with different lucky foods, depending on what kinds of wishes specifically you want to offer your guests, and may or may not have a center space to receive red envelopes with, again, a little bit of literal fortune in them. And so many different snacks can be on these trays. Red or black dyed watermelon seeds for fertility, candied lotus root for abundance, candied winter melon or ginger for good health and longevity, crispy little sesame seed balls or dried kumquats for prosperity, dried pineapple for business success. All of these kind of golden foods.
Yeah.
Sweet golden stuff. Yeah, lovely.
Other lucky dishes involve combining things whose names together means something fortuitous, like the combination of dates, peanuts, dried longan, and lotus seeds to form the phrase "to soon realize the birth of noble sons."
Wow!
Yeah, I love like all this wordplay and phrase smithery going on here. And peanuts. Peanuts are associated with long life and fertility. Fruits like persimmons, peaches, oranges, mandarins, pomelos, and tangerines are all common Lunar New Year's food because their gold skin represents prosperity and good fortune. And the word for gold is similar to the word for orange. The word for pomelo is similar to a word for prosperity or status. You want to buy them with the stems and leaves attached where possible because this has an added longevity bonus.
So many fruits that I've seen in the local international markets make more sense now that I know that. I'm like, oh, that's why they still have the stems and leaves attached.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. A dessert called 8 Treasures Rice Pudding is another way to get in some of those lucky ingredients. This is a molded glutinous rice dish, whole grains of rice. You don't pound them out. Molded glutinous rice dish that's studded with candied plums or citrus or lotus seeds or nuts or red bean paste or what have you. And then kind of flipped or turned out of a dish and coated with sweet syrup. They're very pretty.
Uh-huh. And lobster. This is a bad luck food in Western New Year's culture, but it seems it's a good luck food for Lunar New Year's due to the fact it kind of looks like a dragon.
Yeah.
Chicken, which Lauren mentioned earlier, it was also seen in our New Year's episode for Western New Year's traditions as bad luck. But in Lunar New Year's is seen as good luck for Spring Festival, especially when served alongside the masculine lobster, since chicken is seen as feminine.
Yeah, it's a feminine phoenix to the masculine dragon concept.
Right. The pairing of the two is perceived as promoting a harmonious marriage or a relationship. Is it happy family? It's like some non-Chinese dish that we eat in America. It's something phoenix.
Phoenix and dragon is maybe? Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, yeah.
A whole chicken is seen as a symbol of prosperity, but there are unlucky foods.
Yes.
Yes. Pears, apparently, and porridge. Anything in denominations of 4, because the word for 4 sounds similar to the word for death. And kitchen work, sewing too, should be avoided in general because sharp objects are supposed to be avoided in general. So noted on that. In Buddhism, it is tradition that on Lunar New Year, no animal should be killed. On top of that, vegetables are seen as purifying, so kind of similar to our whole detox thing we have associated with New Year in the West. Buddhists might partake in a vegetable-packed dish called Buddha's Delight. Each of the vegetables involved frequently represent their own specific thing, too.
Okay, this sounds like a tangent, but it's not, I promise. Here in the American South, we have a somewhat humorous saying, the higher the hair, the closer to God.
I've never heard that.
No? Oh, it's great. And it's the same gig, though, with this traditional fortune salad or prosperity salad. It's a combination of ingredients like a salmon or cuttlefish, carrot, radish, citrus, and ginger shredded thin, which the family gathers around a bowl of and tosses high into the air with their chopsticks to mix up before eating. And the higher the salad goes, the greater the family's fortunes. Or perhaps the more the salad overflows the plate, the more abundance will overflow in your life. It's traditional to eat this on that everybody's birthday day, but it varies by family.
That could be both fun and disastrous. I'm very clumsy.
Yeah, I'm afraid of getting a chopstick in the eye, honestly. But
yeah, I could definitely overflow the plate. That I can nail.
You'd be great at this.
Yes.
We mentioned prosperity cakes earlier as being part of the Lantern Festival. And they're these small individual rice flour cakes that are leavened. And they're steamed really hot so that they rise quickly and their tops crack or blossom into these sections or petals or a smile. Some say that the more petals form, the luckier you'll be. And the word for leavened sounds like the word for prosperous. So, again, yeah. Another Lantern Festival Day traditional dessert is sweet and sticky rice dumplings. They use fine-ground glutinous rice flour to make a dough, which may be then filled with sweet and savory paste, usually a red bean or peanut or sesame or golden mung bean paste. And you might serve these in a soup of ginger syrup or sweetened hot water.
Oh, man. I'm getting so hungry.
There's also a larger sticky rice cake called a nyan gao in Mandarin, made with glutinous rice flour and decorated with red dates, usually served warm or in slices fried. And if y'all have never had a sweet glutinous rice dough served warm, it's the same thing as mochi, if you're familiar with Japanese. So it's frequently in America ice cream filled for reasons that I'm still not entirely sure of. But yeah, it's the same thing as mochi dough, but when it's warmed up like that, it's got this sort of like sticky, tacky texture, sort of like a less sweet hot caramel sauce.
Mm-hmm.
More solid, less. Yeah, I don't know. It's a very interesting gummy sort of texture that I enjoy, but that can be difficult.
Yes.
To get right. And I think that Robert and Joe have stories about that.
I believe they do.
A little bit later on.
To close out the festival, on the last day, round dumplings that resemble the full moon are shared amongst family members, again in the spirit of family unity. Apparently, it's a tradition for single ladies to write their phone numbers on mandarin oranges and then throw them to the sea for their true love to find. And, you know, I can't say there's any other better method.
I don't believe in Tinder, personally, so I mean, you know.
Who knows? So that's kind of China Lunar New Year, but there are definitely other countries and traditions.
Yeah, there are so many. We've got just a couple to talk to you about. But first, we're going to take one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes.
Okay, so here are a few that we ran across, popular ones. This one is from Korea, Tokgu. And I'm so sorry if I butchered that. I watched the video, but you know, in and out. This is a huge part of South Korea's New Year's tradition. It's a bowl of soup with egg, beef, vegetables, thin slices of rice cake, and optionally kimchi or dumplings.
Ooh.
I know it sounds really good. That's eaten at the start of the Lunar New Year. It represents health, longevity, and is sort of a birthday soup. If you don't eat it, you won't get 1 year older.
Oh, no.
If you eat two, you'll get 2 years older. This is sort of the story behind it.
Uh-huh.
In fact, instead of asking how old someone is, you can ask them how many bowls of this they've eaten.
Oh, wow.
That's some pretty important soup right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Slightly less intense, but also from Korea, you've got dasuk or tea cookies. These are little melt-in-your-mouth treats that are made from sesame seed powder and sugar syrups. Rice and honey syrups are traditional. They're a little savory and very sweet and sort of powdery on the palate, almost like a well-baked pie dough. And they're often molded into coin shapes, stamped with these pretty patterns and flavored with things like green tea or pine pollen, and stacked as high as possible. Ben, or our coworker Ben Bolin, his lovely partner Brandy brought some of these in for us one time.
Oh,
and
really?
I can't say that they're necessarily to my taste, but I might not. The texture was strange for me, but mm-hmm. I could see where people who liked them would like them very much.
You can understand.
Yeah. Yeah. They were pretty delightful.
Yeah. These were the two that we ran across mostly, and I know there have to be so many more.
Oh, dozens, hundreds. There's only so many research hours in a day.
It's true, but please send us any that we missed.
Oh, absolutely. And we can completely do more other episodes in the future about some. I mean, I think that I could definitely talk an entire episode about dumplings.
Oh, we have to.
It's necessary.
Yeah.
About several episodes for several different kinds of dumplings, probably.
Oh, yeah. Just like a dough filled type thing. That's a huge undertaking. We could have a mini series. The dumpling mini series.
The dumpling year.
Year
of dumplings.
I would tune in.
Oh, I would be so hungry the entire time.
Yes. But this brings us to our much built up guest segment.
Yes.
Guest segment sound effect.
Welcome to the studio, guests. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And we are the hosts of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, another podcast here in the Stuff family. It's really a privilege to be here with y'all.
Oh, thank you so much for coming.
I'm so excited. Yeah. Our first guest.
Yeah.
This is great.
Well, it seemed perfect because you guys were doing this episode for Lunar New Year, and we have some episodes coming out for Chinese New Year. It seemed like it was meant to cross over.
Yes, it was meant to be.
So were y'all establishing any guest rituals here? Like, do you ask people, what have you eaten today?
Oh, that's a good one, actually. Do you want to share?
Sure.
My answer, honestly, would be, it would be a bagel that was provided by my employer.
Uh-huh. Okay, was it toasted?
Yeah, a toasted spinach and cheese topped bagel.
Okay.
With veggie cream cheese.
Okay.
And a bag of pretzel goldfish.
That's your meal for the day?
Yeah, plain white carbs.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's still day left, listeners.
Yeah.
So
if there's
time.
Cheese on there.
Yes. I discovered earlier people have very strong opinions about bagels, so I want to come back to that topic so badly one day. How about you, Robert?
Trader Joe's Indian food. That's
Yeah. They make a good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's some good stuff right there.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about your upcoming Lunar New Year episodes.
Well, we have two of them. One is a discussion of the fabulous Terracotta Warriors of China and what we know about the as yet unbreached mausoleum of the first sovereign emperor.
I think the first emperor of China, Qin Shi Huang, mm-hmm. and I think after doing this episode, I'm convinced that his tomb is, well, we haven't been in his tomb, but his general death area, the necropolis, where all of that stuff is like the coolest ancient death zone in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's like cooler than the pyramids, right?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. But then it's new to me. It's fresh to me right now. So.
Well, when you guys sat down, I was like, oh, I'm sure y'all are going to be talking about very different things for your Lunar New Year episodes than we are.
We did not touch on ancient death zones.
Yeah, I have nothing about death zones in my notes. Yeah, but that's great.
And the other episode is the Chinese typewriter.
Right.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we have an interview with, a techno-historian sort of?
Yeah.
Thomas Mullaney, who wrote a book called The Chinese Typewriter, A History. And it is about the quest to create a way of translating typewriter-style technology to the Chinese written language, which doesn't have a phonetic alphabet, or it doesn't primarily use
one. It, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's going to be a fun discussion for everyone. I think it has a little something for everybody, whether you're into technology or Chinese history and culture, or just what happens when one techno-linguistic system crashes into another.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds really fascinating.
And you also have a story for us about a particular type of Lunar New Year food that you're familiar with, right?
Yes. Yeah. So you guys asked, well, what are our personal histories with some of these traditional foods? And I do have kind of a fun story about the Nan Gao, the glutinous New Year cake.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So this was a couple of years ago. My son was three, and we went up to Chinatown Mall here in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
We went into the little grocery store there, and I wanted to purchase a traditional treat for Chinese New Year. So I happened to see one of these cakes, and I have to describe the package here. It looks like the package of a toy.
Right.
Or maybe one of those like rubbery fish that you put in a bathtub and you watch it grow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it is, in fact, one of these glutinous New Year's cakes in the shape of a koi fish and then covered with a plastic mold that gives it the golden orange coloration of a koi fish.
So was it not golden orange underneath?
No, it was this pale white, like it's actually a koi
weird.
Fish from a subterranean lake.
No, I've seen two primary different colorings on the Niangao cakes. Like one is the pale white ones and the other is like the brown or golden brown ones. Do you think the difference is whether you caramelize the sugar you put in?
I believe that some are made with brown sugar and some are made with white processed sugar. Yes,
oh, okay.
But I'm not. Don't quote me on this. I'm not totally positive. I've not made my own Niangao. Not positive.
Well, my guess would be that this one was definitely processed and it was definitely mass produced.
Uh-huh.
It is almost certainly not a good representation of the culinary tradition.
No, that thing was stamped out of a gas powered machine.
Right. Yeah, I took it down, shared it with in-laws in Mississippi. They were all very polite, but clearly suspicious of the whole process. There were three possible ways to cook the Niangao on the back of the package, and I don't read Chinese, so I wasn't able to really make too much sense of it, but I think we went the microwave route. It came out very tough and rubbery.
Oh, no.
I think it's usually supposed to be steamed, right?
Well, that was one of the possible ways to do it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It had like three different recipes.
Yeah.
I mean, the good news was that it did not run around and ransack the town.
Oh, right. That's good.
Yeah.
So I was just before I've never had a glutinous rice cake like that. But I have had little like not all Niangao are sweet. They're apparently like savory dishes.
Uh-huh.
I think especially maybe Southern Chinese savory dishes. That involved the rice cake. So I've tried to make one of those one time, and it did not turn out well. But I'm not going to blame it on the cakes. I'm going to say it's probably because I did a bad job.
User error. Okay.
But so I've never had the sweet version. I was trying to look up videos about it to see what it was like. And one video I found on the old YouTubes was a reading of a great illustrated children's book called The Runaway Rice Cake.
Yes.
What?
It made me wish I had a kid I could read this book to.
It's a fun one. You showed me the book, and I actually borrowed a copy of this from the library in recent months and,
uh-huh.
and read it to my son. It's a pretty fun book, and I think at the end—
Did he like it?
Yeah, he loved it. It at the end, the rice cake, like, sacrifices itself and lets itself be eaten by an old woman.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a story about generosity.
Huh. Yeah.
So, like, there's a family with not much to eat to celebrate New Year's, but they have— They have this rice cake that the mother makes, and they're excited about it. It's going to be really sweet, but it runs out of the house, and
mm-hmm.
some pigs try to eat it, and they chase it. But they eventually end up sharing it with this poor old woman. She eats the whole thing herself. And I won't spoil the ending for you, but the gods are happy with this.
Oh, wow.
Well,
what a riveting read it sounds.
Yeah.
Joe, you also sent us an Amazon product you found before you came in.
Well, I was trying to figure out, so if you want to make Niangao at home, are there products you need? So I was searching for it in the food section on Amazon, but I found instead a rice cake mold to make fish-shaped rice cakes, the same way you were talking about, Robert.
Ah.
But the product description was like perfect for concrete.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, if you got a lot of concrete, you need to use up.
I'm all for multitasking. I don't know. Should you generally use the same things on concrete that you use to make food? Maybe it doesn't matter.
I haven't, but I guess some people have very different kitchen habits than I do.
Future episode, perhaps.
Absolutely.
Are there any other food traditions that either of you do?
No, sorry. I just got a great idea. You should
yes?
use the mold to make a bunch of rice cakes for your friends, but put a couple of concrete ones in
there. Oh, just slip them in there.
You know, break their teeth.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
If there was an April Fool's of New Year's, of Chinese New Year, then that would be perfect for that one.
It would be. Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Keep that in the back pocket. Yeah. Are there any other food traditions that either of you like to do for Lunar New Year's?
I can't honestly say I've ever made a celebration of Lunar New Year's, but I want to this year. I want to do it for the first time because a lot of the Lunar New Year foods I've been reading about are things I love to cook. I love dumplings. I love mustard greens. I love fish. I haven't yet figured out the appeal of the glutinous rice cake, but I bet I could find that happiness.
Yeah, I believe so.
I guess my main goal is I would just like to have a good one, an authentic one this year if possible. So I'm thinking somebody in town has to have a like a proper home cooked or small kitchen solution here.
Yeah, I know that a few Chinese restaurants in town definitely do it. Like Canton House, I think, does a thing every year.
Or I keep holding out hope that Sweet Hut Bakery will have something because they do a great job with the moon cakes at Autumn Moon Festival. They have like the traditional kind and kind of a fusion approach. So I'm hoping they have a similar approach in store for me with the glutinous rice cake.
Here's hoping.
Have y'all heard about the supposed significance of the rice cake? Because Gao, I think, is a word that also means like higher or higher up. So it's often associated with the idea of like becoming more prosperous or advancing.
Yeah, like ever increasing prosperity, something like that. Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you both so much for coming on, being our first guest. And due to, I guess you could argue, better timing than us, their episodes will be coming out actually near Lunar New Year, whereas ours is coming out before.
This is near? That's nearby?
Yeah, it's near-ish.
It's still in the lead-up, the celebrational approach.
Then we'll pass the baton to you. So their episodes are coming out February 16th-ish?
Well, the week of, yes.
The week of, okay. And we might probably gonna guest on there as well. So look for that, listeners, and check them out anyway. They're awesome.
Yeah.
Not to blow your mind.
All right. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks so much.
You. And we're back. Thank you, guests.
Yes. Hopefully they won't be our last guests.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I don't know. We have like the best food things to talk about, though.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have snacks.
Yeah, we're kind of plotting to get a few more people here in the studio with us in the near future. So hopefully that'll work out.
Yes. But now it brings us to
listener mail.
Yes. So our first listener mail is from Julie, who sent us this. Your episodes on brunch and tipping were especially great as someone who bartended brunch for many years. So many mimosas poured. I once was opening a sparkling wine bottle while not really paying attention. The cork shot out of the bottle right at my eye.
Oh!
Luckily, as I rarely woke up in time to fully make up my face and such for these early shifts, I was wearing my glasses that day.
Oh.
The glasses saved me from a black eye and only sustained a minor chip on the edge of the lens that made me laugh a little every time I put them on.
Oh, I'm so glad that turned out like that.
Me too.
Oh.
And see, I overcame a fear of opening sparkling wine bottles, thanks to Lauren, and food stuff, but this is what I'm talking about right here.
Just put a towel over it. It's going to be fine.
I'm just going to, like, I need safety goggles and a hair tie at all times.
Yeah. I was about to say, like, I feel like safety goggles would be a really good choice for you. You're a little bit accident prone.
Yeah, a little bit.
Ty wrote in about our cupcake episode. Flashback to my junior year of high school in the state of Texas. I was in love with the show Cupcake Wars, so much so that I wanted to start making all the cupcakes I saw on the show. I did. And since I was an only child, I just started passing them out at school. That was until I couldn't afford to do that anymore. So I turned it into a job where I would sell each cupcake for a dollar. While making about 24 per batch, and each batch costing me about $8 to $10, it was about a $14 profit margin, which in high school is great. I would sell to kids before lunch because they were hungry. I would sell to kids after lunch because they were still hungry. Our school had recently gotten rid of vending machines, so if you wanted a snack outside of lunch, you were just out of luck, other than me. By the end of the junior year, I had raised enough money for a trip to Chicago, all expenses paid, buy cupcakes. We even started to go legit and sell cupcakes with our very own website, but that business is now closed. We were called Delight-Filled Cupcakes because every cupcake had a sweet filling.
That's fantastic.
Oh, entrepreneurship. It's terrific.
Yes. And I believe he also tweeted at us that you can freeze cupcakes frosting.
Yeah, same tie. Excellent.
Yeah, I believe so. How many ties could be listening? Ooh. I don't know. It could be a lot. We both looked to our producer, Dylan, like he would have the answer.
Dylan says three. Thank you, Dylan.
Okay. Well, thanks to both of them for writing in. You too can write us in. And please do so if you have any more Lunar New Year traditions or anything else you want to let us know about. Our email is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at FoodstuffHSW. We're also on Instagram at Foodstuff. We hope to hear from you. Thank you so much to aforementioned amazing producer Dylan Fagan. And thanks to y'all for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.